Welcome to the Growth Mindset Podcast with me, Sam Harris, your host. I invite fascinating humans from all walks of life to share their wisdom and unpack their mindsets and formulas for growth. Welcome to the podcast today. I am joined by Jennifer Clamp, who has been a CEO coach for a while and really focuses on startups with a purpose and helping founders go from being an entrepreneurial founder who is maybe just run like a lot of sort of small ideas to being like a full-on CEO of like how to really manage their business and deals with big things as opposed to just small ideas, which is certainly needed a lot lately. So welcome to the show, Jennifer.
Hi, Sam. Thank you. And I love your description. That's great.
Cool. I'm pleased to hear that. I mean, you told me to specifically not use the word expert, and I'm like, but you're so good at this, you're basically, that's what an expert is.
But oh, I love it. But expert, I don't know, to me expert sounds you've got it all nailed and there's always more to learn, so that's why not a big fan of expert.
No, I think we both prefer to be more on like the humble end of being like never saying we're good at stuff and being like, hey, there's so many things I'm bad at. A lot of things is that it generally goes to the people that are most willing to brag about themselves, like social media is kind of like for the bullies that sort of talk about themselves as being amazing and stuff. And actually, if you're kind of like someone that's like a bit like, oh, hey, I can kind of do this, it doesn't sound that compelling. Why are you going to follow someone so much?
So, yeah, that's true.
Anyway, we have some discussion points for the day, although it'd be good to hear a little bit about your experience just to frame the conversation of where we're coming from, I guess, if you don't mind.
Thanks, Sam. So do I get to introduce the topic then?
Yes.
Awesome. So we have had previous conversations around the question, can people change? And I got quite excited about kind of exploring this in more detail with you, because as a coach, if you don't believe people could change, you shouldn't be coaching, basically. So it's a premise of the work that I do is that you believe that people have the capacity to change. And from my perspective about why this question excites and interests me, I am somebody who I think is just naturally very optimistic about what's possible. And as you said, my real passion is working with mission-driven or purpose-led founders, because I have this fundamental belief that people are good and that we have the resources and the technology to live in harmony with one another, in harmony with the planet. And it's just a case of bringing together the right people, the right ideas, and the right technologies in the right way in order to solve the big challenges that we see around us in the world that make people's lives unhappy or destroy things of beauty. And that's really been a theme for me throughout my life and my career. And I ended up getting into project management work and change management work and landed in the economic development space, focusing specifically on innovation and entrepreneurship, and have tried my hand at the third business. So my coaching business is the third business that I would say that I've started. I started one called Garden Genie and won multiple startup competitions and a global competition with that, and then started Tech Week, which is a national festival that scaled to 550 events in 36 locations around New Zealand over a three-year period. So I've turned my hand to creating change as well. And so I guess, can people change? Can we bring about change in the world? Those are topics I firmly believe yes, and it's a topic that gets me very excited.
Thanks for that. I certainly resonate a lot with sort of your approach to things. I have always felt that no one wants to be an idiot, or people would always do the best thing if they can, and I guess generally just trying to do the best thing that they're aware of without the capabilities. And people are always open to change, and I have been surprised by the changes that I have seen in people, that you sort of, whenever someone's like talking about like quitting smoking or something, and some of their friends are just like, oh, you'll never do it, you have failed every time, and I'm always the one I've been, yeah, let's try again, or like whatever it is. It's just, you never know when the day is that someone's gonna have a big change for what's going on with them, so I'm always open to that. But then to make an interesting discussion, rather than me just being like, agree with every single point, I guess I'll be playing more of devil's advocate of being like, oh, but it's so hard to change. And what about these like fundamental things that people just keep on making mistakes on?
And but Sam, we can just build on each other's thinking. That is another option.
True, maybe. But it's good to like sort of question the bit of sort of see where people maybe dig in a bit deeper to make sure the explanation goes well, rather than me just like going, oh yeah, I totally agree straight off the bat, and not actually going into the details of that, I guess.
Nice.
Just to make sure it gets explained properly. So I think this conversation started from when we were coaching and I was having some of my own issues around just fundamentally who I am. Because I mean, I have changed a lot in terms of where I used to be in terms of confidence and speaking in front of people, but I've never been the one that wants to stand up in front of a group of 5-10 people when I haven't worked out exactly what I want to say and just sort of make stuff up. And certainly being a CEO, you kind of spend a lot of time making stuff up. And I am quite detailed at some things and I like to do things properly, but then when you're running around a startup, you just don't always have time to do everything with full plans ahead and just to make things up in the moment. It does kind of like unsettle me a lot. So I can struggle to often come across confidently with like decisions that I'm making or like things that I need to talk about charismatically when I'm there, like trying to work out if it's even the thing I want to be doing and stuff. And I'm just there like, can I do these things? What's going on? I just don't think I'm like as fundamentally as organized as I thought I was. I'm good at like doing all this stuff by myself when I have time to be like slow at everything, but like there's so much speed and I just found it a bit overwhelming and I just don't think I can do it. And you're like, no, Sam, it's fine. You can do all these things. It's going to be great. And the fundamental things about who we are can surprise us a bit when we're just only seeing the negative sides of them and perhaps hadn't even been reflecting on how much I was doing compared to what I was before. And I guess it'd be interesting to kind of go into what you were saying to me before then with that.
Yeah, there is so much that I could touch on in what you just said. You started out actually with a reflection on my opening, and the way that I would sum it up for myself is people are doing their best with what they've got. And that is a kind of a starting point when you're engaging with people. One thing that towards the end of what you were just saying, I was thinking, I was reflecting in preparation for this conversation. And in doing so, I ended up jotting down 7 conditions that I think are required for change. And the first one is believing that we can. And as you say, my optimism and belief in the fact that people can change is a real asset in those coaching conversations. Like you said, when I said to you, no, you can, and this is possible, sometimes you do need somebody else to tell you it's possible. And role models are a really valuable part of that, and having peers go through similar situations are a really valuable part of that. But back to coaching conversations, and I hope you don't mind me offering this up, we did talk about it beforehand, but you had said, Sam, when you're having a particularly down moment, is it possible for people to fundamentally change who they are? Although I would say absolutely yes, because I'm a coach and I believe that is possible. Or you said through the coaching relationship, and I can talk about how the role that coaching plays, but this is a bigger picture conversation as well. When you asked that question, I felt really sad because I'm like, oh my gosh, I've got to know Sam. And there are so many awesome things about you, your curiosity, your compassion, you're very kind, the way that you think, the way that you see the system and the connection between things. There's so much that I had already discovered about you and who you fundamentally are that I'd be sad if you wanted to change. But I do understand that we all have parts of ourselves that we think, maybe things could turn out a little bit differently and could be more comfortable and more enjoyable if they were different. And I reflected on why I had responded that way and remembered a quote from Carl Rogers. So Carl Rogers developed this human-centered approach. So he's a psychologist. He sits in the humanistic psychology field and is really kind of who I would look to as the foundation for my coaching work. And the quote from him is, "The curious paradox is that when I accept myself as I am, then I can change." And with the experiences that I've had in life, that really resonated for me and was something that I felt in that moment having that conversation with you was what it's that thing of what you resist will persist, right? Whilst you're trying to reject parts of who you are, and maybe you weren't in that space, but if you're rejecting who you are, you can't change it. It's only through profoundly accepting who you are and that you can then change, basically. So I would say that for me, believing that you can change and then making peace with who you are kind of the first couple of steps or first conditions that I think then need to be change.
Yeah, thanks. I really like that. And thanks also for all the nice things that you noticed about me that I sort of ignore when you're just looking at your flaws and you're like, oh, I'm useless. And when you're actually, okay, there are so many good qualities that you do bring. So that's very nice to hear.
You bring so many good qualities.
Thanks, Jen. And I feel like it sort of just relates in general to quite a lot of things, as in, if you're sort of aiming for success, obviously you should aim to do things beyond where you're at and such. But I think when you tie your happiness to like that future goal, you then strive for it more and it kind of doesn't come to you so naturally. Whereas if when you can be happy with where you're at, it's much easier to then go beyond that. And I feel like having a bit more of a stoic approach to being comfortable with where you are and knowing that you could have something different, but not pinning your happiness on that until you reach it. And then I feel like you're just happy the whole way along as you're getting towards that thing. And I think it just seems to occur in the many different ways. And so I've really felt like a resonance with that around like actually trying to change who you are when you're fundamentally unhappy with who you are until you are someone different. It's kind of bad and you maybe like just don't properly engage with your flaws in the way that you should. Whereas when you kind of like can be comfortable with who you are and where you're at, it's much easier to like actually sort of see that you have like the abilities to improve in other ways, and then you can do a much better job of that. So yeah, thanks for that lesson. I want to hear now more about the other conditions for change. Well, so far we've hit number one.
One, believe we can. Number two is kind of what you're touching on, which I jotted it down when I was thinking about establishing a baseline, which is what you're talking about, which is being where you are and being really realistic about where you are. And in from a personal perspective, that might be accepting who you are is getting realistic about, it's not necessarily realistic, but yeah, coming to say, this is how I am, and accepting it rather than fighting it and then being able to move through it. And I think that's kind of what we're aiming to get to, is to go, okay, you know, yes, I might always be late for things and I might be a bit disorganized and sometimes I can be a bit vague, but I also have these characteristics about myself that I love and that do work for me. And on balance, I'm happy with who I am. And establishing that baseline and feeling happy with who we are, I think, is an important first step or an important condition to be able to then move forward, as you say. This is why I love strengths work and appreciative inquiry. So strengths work we use in coaching. So understanding your strengths, and then appreciative inquiry is used often in organizational development context. And again, you touched on this earlier. What I love about these approaches is what they say is, yeah, okay, the conditions may not be perfect. We may want to create change, but let's focus on what's working and build on that. Or let's focus on our strengths and look at how we can use those to create change, rather than trying to fix something that's not working, rather than focusing on our weaknesses or focusing on the problems. That for me, it fits in again with that idea of when I accept myself, then I can change, because you go, okay, maybe I'm not good at that, this, but I am good at that and I'm going to build on that. And when you get clear on your strengths, then you can look at how you can use those to balance out your weaknesses.
Yeah, it's really good. And you can sort of reflect on other ways that you may have changed before. And also when you've seen other people change, you're like, okay, actually, this is definitely a lot more possible, even despite the flaws that I had before and thought I couldn't deal with, etc. So that was really nice around reflecting on like what your strengths are as well. Can really help balance things out, and just accepting yourself who you are and not beating yourself up about it. Listen, no one is all good or all bad. We just are aware of our bad things, which I think is one of the benefits of coaching as such. As in, I was going to ask them, would be good to have a bit of a conversation around that, the conditions for change, but then how do you then inspire that? So I was going to say, like, okay, sure, journaling helps you like establish a baseline of who you are and where you're at, and meditation and things. But I think coaching can be really good because of, I'll just talk about the bad things to myself and I won't sit down. Whereas I guess if I had a journey where I had to write like, what are all the things that I'm really good at and why is the world a better place because of the things that I'm doing, like, I maybe would notice them a bit more, but I tend to not ever do that. And I'm like, oh, maybe I should do that now. But it's so much better when you do have someone else telling you all the good thing qualities that you have. So it does help balance that out a bit more and you can be a bit more comfortable.
Besides my podcast, I also run a tech startup which is one of the most stressful things you can do with yourself. I'm also currently training for ultramarathons, and so I have a pretty great recipe for exhausting myself. However, I've been using the Open app, which is a mindfulness studio with a new way to practice well-being. The meditation, yoga, and breathwork classes help level me out and energize me. The breathwork is just a really nice way to kick off your day, and it's my favorite thing to do after lunch to just combat the energy dip, which I seem to be suffering from until I started using this, and I just work through the afternoons way better, much better than coffee, for example. You can practice with Open Live in group classes or on demand with their library of meditation, breathwork, yoga, and Pilates classes. And I found it the best place to find my Zen, and it's only an affordable $10 a month. However, for listeners of the Growth Mindset podcast, you can get your first month entirely free with the promo code GROWTH. That's GROWTH. So go to their website, open-together.com/growth, for 30 days free, or use the link in the show notes.
There's something that I love when I was doing my coaching training and we're looking at strengths work in particular. We touched on hope theory, that people feel more hopeful if they can identify six pathways to make something happen. And strengths is, if you've had taken time to think about and look at what your strengths are, each of those strengths can then be a pathway to make something happen or make change happen or to respond to a situation. And it's really lovely to hear you reflect, Sam, because I think that's why I really enjoy coaching. When I think about another little anecdote, if you don't mind, unfortunately, we don't have the cameras on, so I can't see your facial expression as I go off on another tangent. But a friend of mine, he did something he really shouldn't have done. He wouldn't have told anyone else, but he told me. And I said to him, you know, you're a better person than this. I don't think you'll do this again. But he got quite upset with me being upset with him, because he's like, no, I can't handle you being upset with me. You're the only person that just totally accepts me for who I am, and I can tell you the bad stuff and you still love me. And I didn't actually realize that about myself, and I didn't realize how important it was to him and actually to other people in my life. And I think that's something that I do bring into that coaching relationship, is that I'm blessed with seeing the beauty in people and the talent in people. And so giving them an opportunity to realize that about themselves and encouraging them to look at the good within themselves and maybe where they don't feel capable, to reflect on where they have done things before. And I mean, you picked up on a really important point, Sam. This is something that I will ask people to reflect on in coaching, is when have you felt confident? When have you been able to think on your feet? How have you handled situations in the past when you didn't necessarily have the answer, but you still feel you handled the situation well? And it's also part of the NLP strategies work, is to then think about, how do I then recreate these conditions for myself where I'm really happy with how I responded in this current situation? That kind of family of strengths and appreciative inquiry and thinking about positive examples that you can then bring into what might be a current challenging situation.
I really like that. Thanks. We've got the first two of our seven conditions for change. And what's the third one?
Oh, do you know, I had not thought of the conversation continuing on these down this line, but...
so we've got like a whole other section of many different things to go down. Let's just like sort of step back a second. Like, say, what were the different sets of notes that you had to discuss? I feel like this is quite a good just general format of like, okay, let's just go through the seven conditions and...
Absolutely. There's so much that comes to mind. Okay, so I think the conditions are believing that you can... establishing a baseline, which we've explored, establishing what I've written down, establishing a goal, but it's part of knowing your own mind, knowing what you want. And I think it's really important to kind of know who you are and be very grounded in the reality of the current situation when you are then establishing that goal and defining how you want things to be or the direction that you want to head in. So number four, getting out of our way, or getting in our way in the right way. So this is very much around, sometimes we know what we're meant to be doing and we just don't do it anyway. And
yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say that often that is because of beliefs that we hold. And I can go a lot more into that. And that basically things that we believe trigger emotions, which influence our actions. We get a response from people around us and they reinforce our beliefs. And so I think that a condition for change is kind of a willingness to actually explore what's going on internally, that even though you would like to do things differently, you're not. Then I think the number five, I would say, is getting out of our comfort zone and having stretch experiences. And I can imagine you have a lot to say on that topic, because I know that you've done some really neat and interesting things and really pushed yourself outside of your comfort zone. Even leading a startup when you don't like having to stand up in front of people is an example in itself. Because those getting out of your comfort zone, putting yourself in those stretch experiences, really disrupts your way of thinking. And also, I would say it often challenges your identity as well, which can be a big influencer of how we behave. Exploring different perspectives is number six. Again, there are multiple ways of doing that, but realizing that your way of seeing things isn't the only way of seeing things, and being able to accept that you're not all good and not all bad, that just because somebody's way of doing things is very different to yours, or way of thinking is very different to yours, it doesn't make it right or wrong. So being able to hold those different perspectives and exposing yourself to those different perspectives. And then the last condition for change, I think, is a willingness to try new things on and experiment with new ways of being. And eventually they become the norm. They become the new you. I read recently that something can feel really hard or like a really big leap, especially if you have followed a traditional career path or even starting a company. It can feel like, oh gosh, you know, the idea of having staff might feel really intimidating. But then once you're there, you look back and you go, oh my gosh, I thought this was going to be such a big deal having staff, but now I'm here, it's just part of my day to day. And actually now something else feels really intimidating or impossible. Yeah. And so that's the kind of trying new things on, and eventually they just kind of become the norm. So that's my seven conditions.
Wow. I really like those. Great seven conditions for change. I could sort of ramble on about like each one of them basically for quite a long time. What were the other things that you'd been planning to discuss, or should we sort of deep dive in some of those examples?
So kind of taking a step back, one of the things that I find quite curious is that when thinking about change is we know that as children we change, right? And we develop, but we don't really think about development as adults. I think most people would kind of know Piaget's kind of four stages of cognitive development for children, but they wouldn't know that there actually are five stages of adult development have been defined. It was Keegan who defined those through shifts in like your perspective and your thoughts and your feelings and your actions. And as you evolve through each stage, you become more flexible and more adaptable and less attached to like what others think of us, being able to think independently of others, to actually question ourselves. We get less attached to our identity, and we can hold two conflicting ideas as both true at the same time. Like even being able to kind of get your head around the fact that two ideas that are totally in conflict could both be true is part of adult development. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a really curious thing as humans, says, and we can be doing that. I don't understand how we can be so hypocritical in our natures around if we can believe two things quite fundamentally. It's good to give some examples maybe, but it's pretty odd the way I even find myself doing that. I'm now like thinking of like examples that I don't want to give. I'm like, oh, damn it.
I'm like, come on, Sam.
Yeah. This is annoying.
But some people can't. I mean, that's like being able to hold those two conflicting ideologies as true at the same time is like stage five of adult development. And only 1% of the population ever get there. Most of us get stuck at stage three.
Yeah, interesting. So as in, if you kind of weigh up like some positives and negatives of something, let's say you're in a relationship with someone and you're like, okay, this person's really good in this way, but then they're really bad for me in the other ways. And you can kind of identify that actually like it's a thing you shouldn't be doing, but then you sort of still go back to it, say. Is that like holding two different things, like you're sort of being hypocritical in your nature? Is that a different level of thing because you're just sort of drawn to something else?
So where I would go with that is definitely around that the piece that we were talking about with getting out of our way or in our way in the right way. So Understanding why you may know what you should be doing, but you aren't doing it. Would you say that's a fit?
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm just going to be a total psychology geek again, but Keegan and Leahy have this immunity to change model that basically looks at what is the conflicting belief or assumption that is causing you to do something that you shouldn't be doing. Because they're basically saying that your reason for doing it is you never do anything unless it's going to benefit you, right? Sure. So there is some reason that you continue doing it. There is a benefit to you in some way, even though it doesn't seem that way. There's this belief that you hold that's creating this immune response that's getting just that you continue to do something even though you shouldn't do it. So yeah, that's not really two ideologies. In that situation, you're thinking more about digging into what is it that I believe that is going to happen that's keeping me in this pattern? How is this pattern actually working for me? Because it has to be working for me or otherwise I'd change it.
So that gets similar, like, okay, I know that like these ginger nuts are bad and I shouldn't be eating ginger nuts every time I go for a drink, but like I am accidentally, which is... more of the sort of mental ability to just like resist
the habits,
as opposed to ideologies of things that you sort of just have going on in your brain of different things. Okay, cool.
I'm delighted today to be supported by Wealthfront. If you want to invest for the long term, it helps to invest on your terms. Maybe you're a pro solar cannabis supporter, mental health advocate, or an emerging market crypto nerd, kind of like I am, or maybe you're not, but whoever you are, you should invest in what you believe in, and that's what makes Wealthfront so great. In just minutes, you can get started with Wealthfront's classic portfolio, or you can make things custom with the investments you care about most. Wealthfront even offers a socially responsible portfolio, which is a mix of funds built around human rights, climate change, and sustainability. Wealthfront is super easy to personalize, so you can tweak your portfolio to match the things that you care about, like crypto trusts or energy funds and cannabis and hundreds of options more. So no matter what you're into, Wealthfront will help you build wealth responsibly and protect you from making silly mistakes like going all in on some bad advice from Reddit, which I maybe have done before. Best of all, Wealthfront is totally automated. They do all the trading, all the rebalancing, and they even help you lower your tax bill as you invest. It's streamlined, it's effortless, and it works like a charm. Or at least it works like really exceptional software. So, get your first $5,000 managed completely for free at wealthfront.com/growth mindset. Start building your wealth today at wealthfront.com/growth mindset. That is wealthfront.com/growth mindset.
Like I said, 1% of the population get there. So, the Keegan stages of adult development, they have been applied in a leadership context. And there's a model that I love that I find really valuable called the vertical development model. And it's basically looking at how you think and identify 7 different thinking styles along a continuum. And when you get to the kind of the highest level of thinking or kind of the right end of the continuum, you're talking about people who are kind of totally enlightened. You're talking about your Gandhis of the world. It's those individuals who can kind of forgive the people who have hurt them or locked them up or abused them. It's being able to know that person has the capacity to do that terrible thing, but also to have absolute compassion and forgiveness for them at the same time. In a business context, I don't know that there are that many people leading businesses that have achieved that kind of level of enlightenment. Oh, I just read Barack Obama's book, A Promised Land. And he reflects on the fact that when problems come to him, it's because many, many talented people that report into him could not solve the problem because there was not an answer. Because at the end of the day, it was going to require a trade-off and neither option was good. And I think it's the ability to be able to think through those situations and think through the trade-offs and come to a decision and feel good about your decision. And be able to understand that the world is just complex and that it's not straightforward and something can be right and wrong at the same time. Not okay, many people get there, right? 1%? Not many business leaders get there.
My friend posted like a really nice post yesterday about the power of time to heal and things. I'm like, yes, this is so true. Whatever you're going through, it's bad. When you let time do its work, like you can get through anything. This is awesome. actually being kind to yourself and like not even feeling bad at all, because you're like, hey, it doesn't matter. I think the faster you're able to accept reality and just feel comfortable with it, the faster you heal in any way. And that's all that you're doing with time, is use time as the medium to get you to the point where you're now comfortable with reality as it is. So like you have some like jarring change in the reality, like this person wasn't as you expected, or your company didn't go how you wanted it to, or some like projects failed and it pisses you off or doesn't work out. And the process of attuning to this new reality is the process that you go through. And if that takes lots of time, you're sort of wasting your own time feeling in this negative situation. Whereas if you go, oh, this is a new reality, well, this is where I am now, base level, that's that. You can just carry on being happy and doing whatever it is you should be doing in the most appropriate way for your current situation.
That is such a beautiful example as well, because what I'm hearing is you might have agreed with her a while ago that, yeah, it takes time because it keeps nagging at you until something else becomes more important. That is a beautiful thing.
That was really good.
Do you remember a moment or a situation when you first had that realization?
Yeah, definitely. So I think the first one was when like 15 or 16, sort of, you know, like the first love of your life or whatever, and you're going out with them, like, this is amazing. And then they break up with you, you're like, this is the worst thing ever. And you cry lots and it's like, my heart's broken and stuff. And then like, I think a week later, I went out with them again. And then like, we broke up, and it was just, the second time I broke up, I was like, why did I cry so much the first time? As in, I was single before I was going out with this person. It's okay. It's kind of annoying. But I kind of just got over it like really fast. And I kind of realized that I just didn't need to feel so bad about things. My situation was like no worse than it used to be when I was quite happy. And it was like, well, if I was happy as this person, why do I like, it's just like my stupid biology, like caring about these things. I don't need to care that much. And I can just sort of appreciate the downness of it, but not really identify with it and like, carry on with my day and things. And so, yeah, I've never really had issues with breakups since then, which has been nice. And then a similar thing was like, I got a parking ticket when I was 18 or something, or 17. And I just had the worst day. It was partly my friend's fault, but it was my car, and I still like didn't check because I just agreed with him. He used to live in that city, and I was like, oh, if you were, probably it's fine. And I was just like a mopey, annoying person the rest of the day. And like, we had this like fun night out we planned, but I just didn't really enjoy it. And I was just kind of a bit of like a not fun person to be around. Then the next day, I got another parking ticket, and I was just like, what? And was really unhappy for about 5 seconds, and I was like, you know what, I don't want to have a shit day again. I just had a shit day. I don't need another shit day. And I just was like, well, I mean, the parking ticket's there, I have to pay the fine now, so let's just look at my bank account as I've already paid the fine, and that's that. And I had such a good day because I just didn't care about this thing, and I just accepted what the reality was instead of like fighting it and being annoyed, be like, oh, it's my friend's fault or whatever. I was just like, yeah, whatever, this is fine. This is where I'm at now. I just accepted this new base level instantly, and I had such a great day. So that was really cool. But then I still, you know, hardly become like the Buddha or anything straight away. And so another really good example was when I was staying with a friend. We went out for a bit and we'd left something cooking by accident, me and a different friend. Like, and the guy wasn't actually at the house that we were staying in, and he had a new kitchen and everything. And there's, thing we left cooking completely, like it boiled over, like cooked itself into the hob, the saucepan was ruined, and that was like black tarry treacle running down his new surfaces and like underneath them. And like, and we got back and it smelled kind of a mix of burnt hair and piss, and you're like, oh my god, what is that smell? When did they just saw this like ruined kitchen? It was like late at night, everyone was tired. And he just was, any normal human would have just been like, what the hell have you done? Would have been annoyed, would have been anxious, and like, God, we've got to fix it. Probably like shouted at us a bit or something. And we were like, oh crap, we've really messed this up. And he just literally was like, oh guys, I've got to go to bed. I've got to get up early tomorrow. I've got like a speech on. And he just went to bed. Didn't say anything bad. And we're like, is Bob retarded? What is wrong with Bob? Like, we've just messed up his new kitchen. And like, and we stressed about it. We fixed it. We did everything that we could. We bought him some presents the next day. And he got home from work the next day. And it was mostly, the kitchen part was fine, the saucepan was, we had to throw it away, but we got a new one, we got some other things. And he was very happy for his new presents and that we'd stayed up all night fixing his kitchen. And he didn't feel any negative energy the entire time. He just took a wide right turn at his corridor of pain that he was about to walk through. Whereas I know that I would have been like, damn, what the hell have you done to my kitchen? I would have maybe like unsettled the people I was guests with. I would have had a shit night's sleep. I would have been frustrated. And it's like, wait, why would I have held onto all that pain and made myself go through that thing? And in time, got to come to terms with it, but maybe I've not been such good friends with the people that had just done that to me. Whereas he just literally carried on having a nice day. And I was like, that is next level Buddha enlightenment happiness. So that definitely made me realize that you don't need to identify with these things and walk through the long corridor of like pain or whatever it is that you want to use as an analogy for it. So yeah, a few stories there.
I love it. And it takes time. Like, this happens over your lifetime, doesn't it? You have these examples and you see somebody respond differently and you go, oh, I have a choice. I don't have to respond in this way. There's an old boss of mine drew out on a piece of paper, S plus R equals O, when I was getting very wound up about a situation. And he was just looking at me smiling whilst I was steaming. And it's situation plus response equals outcome. And the other thing that I often said to a client about, and I guess I talk about this quite frequently, is emotion is data as well. But your emotional response, how you feel in response, your immediate feeling in response to a situation gives you some information, but it isn't everything. You can choose how you respond to that emotion. There's other information that you can bring into your decision on how to respond. And being able to create that separation, I would say, is something that we get better at as we mature as well. And I think you and I have touched on this at some point, maybe somatic therapy, which is really about kind of getting out of your head and being aware of what your body's telling you. Like, you know, we think that the only place information comes from is our brain in terms of logic, but actually there's a lot that our body can share with us in terms of information, like your feelings. So much of kind of what you feel, your gut response, what's important to you, you will feel those in your body before you actually think anything in your brain, or I guess it's emotion. But anyway, the process that he took me through is he downloaded to him what had happened, and he said, that's a nice story, when I was furious at that. And then he said, now, what are you experiencing in your body? And we explored that, and he kind of went through this process of kind of, and if you couldn't feel that, what would you feel? And kind of what's underneath that, and just kept on digging through. And at first it was kind of like, I feel sick, my stomach's knotted, I feel angry. And then underneath that was hurt. And then we kept on digging down, and it's like, wow, I really, really loved this person. And I trusted them, I respected them, and I thought that was mutual. At the end of the day, the reason I was feeling so bad was because I loved them. And when I kind of came to that realization, I'm like, well, love is a great thing, and I wouldn't take that back. And so then when those emotions then came up again, because they keep flooding through, it's kind of like, yeah, I feel this bad because I have loved. There we go. I don't want to stop loving. And yeah, being exactly, able to just kind of, it's reframing it and being able to move on.
Definitely. It's one of those things that I don't think you can, well, yeah, wide, right time, just completely skip all negative feelings of like that. But you can adjust quicker when you realize things, as you said, could have taken you 18 months, but instead you managed to really sort of go much deeper into the things that you really needed to kind of work through over time instead, and do a faster reparation of what your feelings were and understanding yourself and why you were feeling down, to then like do the healing process better and not feel so many of the negative emotions, which was great. Thank you so much for like actually sort of taking us through the details of that as well. That's really useful. So this has been super fascinating, and clearly we can go on talking about this for hours, but I really have to run now. And
I know
I would really like to do like a deep dive one on each of like the seven conditions actually, but maybe sort of perhaps like try and time box them each to like sort of 20 minutes or something, so we could do a few at a time. But I thought that could be a really good sort of series really to just put together.
Yeah, I would love to do that. And there's, I touched on vertical development, but I think there's so much that we can draw on here in terms of supporting leaders in their transition, which is kind of where we started at, which is my work, which is supporting founders in that journey to CEO. And as your business grows, it becomes more complex. We've touched on kind of the ways of thinking, your way of thinking, how you think. Your business needs you to evolve the way you think. as it grows. And that's absolutely something that you can facilitate and make happen. And it would be great to explore that with you as well.
Cool. Looking forward. So I guess this is maybe the introduction to the start of a bit of a series on change and growth, which is obviously what the podcast is about, what it's meant to be. So epic. Looking forward to it.
Thank you for joining us this week on the Growth Mindset Podcast. Before you head on to another episode, what's your biggest aha moment from today's discussion? You can share with us your insights and join us on Reason FM. Reason FM is a social podcasting app and the best way to discover new podcasts, connect with hosts and other listeners. Also, don't forget to tune into the Wiser Than Yesterday podcast with me and my co-host Nico, and we expose you to a different perspective and dive into the world's most thought-provoking and inspiring books. That's all for this episode, and with that, keep learning and keep growing.